You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Dan Greenberg.
If you bring respect to a user or a consumer, that consumer will respect you back. You know, if brands respect consumers, consumers will respect brands. And the inverse is often true. If a brand disrespects a user by taking over a page with something inane, the chance that a user is going to respect that brand, you can fill in the blank, but it's obviously unlikely that somebody's going to appreciate and respect a brand who's not bringing respect from their side.
Dan is the CEO and founder of ShareThrough, the largest independent native advertising platform that powers in-feed native ads for publishers like Forbes, Time, and CBS, and enables marketers like Coca-Cola and P&G to programmatically distribute branded content at scale. He dropped out of the Stanford Master's program to start ShareThrough and went on to popularize the term native advertising in 2008 and now serves as chair of the IAB Native Ad Committee. He has been named to Ad Age's 40 Under 40 list, Forbes's 30 Under 30 list, Inc.'s 35 Under 35 founders list, and honored as an Ad Age media maven. Dan, welcome to On Brand.
Ooh. Sounds like I've gotten a lot of awards. Kind of embarrassing there. Well, 40 under 40 is next. I don't know, 40 over 40.
I was going to say, without knowing exactly your age at this time, I did want to add that we've decided to make you an on-brand blank under blank. So just fill in the age, and we think you're doing an awesome job.
I'll tell you what all those awards mean. Those awards mean that we have a good PR firm. So thanks, thanks to our PR firm.
Well,
but nice to meet you. I guess I got to put my podcast voice on. We were chatting before, but I like your podcast voice.
My podcast voice. That's a nicer way of putting it. My wife occasionally calls it my game show host voice. So so regardless of what it is, I do have that a little bit. But, you know, it sounds like in there, beyond your blank under blanks, that you are really one of the... I always think it's fascinating. We have these labels that we get into with things like content marketing and hearing from people on the forefront of that thing before we called it that thing or when we start calling it that thing. I'm a bit of a word nerd myself, so I'm always fascinated at how we arrived there, because it had to have been a point where people might have been bouncing back and forth between a few different terms. How do we get to native? What speaks to what you do about that label?
Happy to unpack it and kind of talk beyond native as well. So like you mentioned, I started this company actually out of a Stanford master's program that I got about halfway through and dropped out of. So I got to graduate undergrad, started a master's, found a seed and a co-founder in Rob Fan, who is actually still with me, CTO, something like 12, 13 years later. And actually to start at the end, and I'll go backwards, ShareThrough was acquired by a Canadian company called District M about 6 months ago. And we've unified forces, both, I guess, north of the border and south of the border, into now what I think is the fifth or sixth largest global ad exchange in the world. Beyond native, we're omni-channel, omni-format. You know, we are right in line with any of the other sort of mega ad exchanges like a PubMatic or a Magnite or an OpenX, or obviously Google's AdX, which we all in some ways live in the shadow of. And let me work backwards with native. The seed of this business, the very beginning, you know, from sort of the academic roots of where we started, was this idea around behavior change and persuasion, in that if you can design triggers to fit naturally into an experience that somebody's already doing, like fit a natural moment of behavior change or a natural persuasion trigger into the thing that I'm already doing, it is just much more effective, much more potent, much more respectful, much more, you know, what somebody is expecting to see. And if you give somebody what they're expecting to see, they're much more likely to act on it. And so from the very beginning of Share Through, we talked about the company as like a mouthful of words. Like, we are the first platform for integrated, non-standard, respectful, human-centric, you know, modern advertising. And what we meant by that whole mouthful of words was we do what ended up being called later native advertising. A guy named Fred Wilson, who is like one of the legendary VCs in New York, did a big talk, I think in like 2010 or 11 or so, about native monetization systems. And I heard that talk, and he was talking about all sorts of different native monetization systems for different types of businesses. And I remember having a moment with my co-founder where I think I sent him an email or called him and said, hey, I finally found the word. Let's change our entire framing and our entire brand. You know, we're not this mouthful of non-standard, customized, integrated, respectful, human-centric advertising. We're a native advertising platform, or we're a native monetization platform. And so we bought the domain nativeadvertising.com, which actually we still publish stuff to. We, you know, pivoted the whole sort of story of the company around native. We popularized the concept. And what started as like the seed of an academic idea, this idea that if triggers fit in, they're more, you know, performant, and ads can perform better, and really any sort of behavior change will perform better. That seed of an academic idea turned into the seed of the business. And what was just incredible to me is that the business really turned into a movement. Native advertising, it was something that ShareThrough does and ShareThrough popularized, and, you know, I and my community helped kind of breathe life into. We hosted native ad summits, and we brought, you know, thousands of people together to kind of jam on the future of, you know, what is native advertising going to be for the open web. Obviously, on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and LinkedIn, it's the only monetization strategy. You know, you'll never see a banner, you'll never see a pre-roll, you'll never see an interruptive homepage takeover on, you know, a sort of self-respecting closed platform like Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and LinkedIn. Yet you do still see that on the open web, and you do still see that on, you know, Forbes or Time.com or, you know, even in New York Times. You'll still see pretty traditional ad formats. And so what we did as an industry and as a company was to move the ethos in the direction of the future, and the direction of that future, you know, having been born in Silicon Valley but then brought to the rest of the world, this idea that ads should, can, and must fit in. And so native advertising is kind of an overarching philosophy of advertising. It's an ad format, but it's also a philosophy. And the philosophy is that if you can make your ads fit in naturally, if you can make your marketing respectful, if you can make your outreach to new customers as respectful as your customer support might be for your existing customers, you know, as respectful as your tweets and your Facebook posts are for your followers and your fans, that the outreach to new customers will be much more effective if you bring the same level of authenticity, the same level of respect, the same level of sort of love and care that you show to your existing customers to new customers that you're trying to bring on through advertising. And so that concept has underpinned everything we do as a business. We today have expanded out into a, you know, like I said, global ad exchange across formats, and we've brought the spirit of native beyond just the native ad format to banners, to video ads, to outstream, in-stream, you know, mobile, desktop, tablet. But all of it imbued with this idea that if you bring respect to a user or, you know, a consumer, that consumer will respect you back. You know, if brands respect consumers, consumers will respect brands. And the inverse is often true. If a brand disrespects a user by taking over a page with something inane, the chance that a user is going to respect that brand, you know, you can fill in the blank, but it's obviously unlikely that somebody's going to appreciate and respect a brand who's not bringing respect from their side. And so our story, I'm talking here and you can pop in, but our story starts with, again, the seed of this idea that human-centric design for advertising can bear fruit for everyone, bear fruit for the user, obviously, because it's a more human-centric approach to the way that advertising works, bear fruit for the advertiser, it performs better, and as a result, bear fruit for the publisher, because if it performs better, it monetizes better. And so I've been on this mission for, you know, 10, 11, 12 years now. And I'm super encouraged in that Web 2.0, you know, the Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, modern platforms are all in and there's no looking back. And Web 3 will probably never even see a banner ad. And so I think we're in an incredibly exciting moment in time for the internet. And if you want to chat about Web 3 stuff too, I think we're at a pivotal moment where the beginnings of native monetization systems for Web 3, for, you know, on-chain revenue strategies for Web 3, and just sort of human-centric, respectful marketing and advertising strategies will no longer just be an option for enlightened brands. It'll be the only strategy for any brand who wants to reach a human.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the seven dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show.
I want to get back to Web3, but you said something in there that I think maybe of the many things that I think are fascinating, especially this focus on respectful, human-centric design and advertising, because I think that the car salesman stuff that most people typically tie to, oh, that's what an ad's going to do, this really presents a different path. So I couldn't agree more there. But you talked about this business that you started for, as you noted, a very academic reason, turned into a movement. And that's one of those things that when we talk about brand building is sort of an aspirational goal for many. So I know that folks might hear that and wonder, gosh, how can we do that? Were there key moments in both building a business or maybe between those two of building a business that ultimately became a movement?
It starts with conviction. And it starts with a community. You know, I was not singularly responsible for any of this. I and my co-founders did sort of name and frame the movement. But it started with conviction. And so, I don't know, it wasn't a formula, but let me look back and try to abstract it into a formula. We saw the future that we were living in. You know, we didn't have some prediction. It wasn't some crystal ball. It wasn't some dream that we woke up from and saw a different future. We were actually just living in the future. I forget who gave that advice. Maybe it was I forget who gave that advice. But there's some incredible advice that I've always stuck with me that says, live in the future, find important problems worth solving. And I take that to heart. You know, that's why I've been so dove so deep into Web3 over the past 6 months, 12 months, because it honestly feels like the future that I want to live in and learn about. But thinking back like 10 years ago, the future we were living in was just Web 2.0. It was Facebook. It was the emergence of YouTube. It was the emergence of social platforms and social connections and social networks, which today we just take for granted. But in 2004, YouTube didn't exist. In 2005, yeah. YouTube had like just started. In 2006, YouTube had a few viral videos. By 2007-08, people were kind of sharing YouTube videos. And then by like 2009, which is what, 12 years ago, YouTube was a standard for videos on the internet. But that means 12 years ago, it's hard to remember, but we were bouncing through pages on the internet. The standard behavior was like sending an article link to a friend via Google chat or AOL Instant Messenger, and someone clicks on it and lands on a page. There were no infinite feeds. There was no Facebook. There was no social connections. It was a web of pages. And Web 2.0 introduced a web of feeds. And a web of feeds, which we were living in, said, if the feed had a voice, the feed would say, I want ads that fit the feed. I don't want ads that take over the whole screen. I don't want ads that that feel like foreign objects inserted into this native experience. I want ads that are native, that are integrated to my feed. And so the world we were living in, it just felt obvious to us that ads should fit in. I remember we even used to make like billboards and posters and put them on the walls and stickers. And we ended up actually buying some billboards in San Francisco where the tagline was just those four words, ads should fit in. And we would do sort of integrated versions of those ads. If you want to look them up online, I bet if you search for ads should fit in or ads can fit in, you'll find it. But the idea there is that we had conviction because we were living it. We're living in a future and had conviction that there was a problem we're solving, which was traditional ads born pre-internet, which had been copy and pasted to Web 1.0, made no sense for Web 2. And in Web 2.0, there was a new form factor emerging. That form factor was integrated, human-centric, respectful advertising. But it was done just in the closed platforms. So it was being done on Facebook, on Reddit at the time, had their own version of like integrated feed ads. Twitter had just been born and had its own version of promoted tweets. Even stuff like Dig had its own version of Dig ads. And we said, what if we take that seed, build a technology platform that enables Web 1.0 publishers and industry 1.0 media companies, the Times and the Hearsts and the Gannets and the USA Todays and the New York Times of the world, to build their own versions of native advertising systems, native monetization strategies, and bring the types of ad products that users were coming to expect in Web 2.0 to Web 1.0. And so, again, it started with that conviction, like, this is going to be the way the world is. It's just a matter of time, and it's just a matter of sort of moving people through that time and helping people find their own conviction. And so, I don't know, I'm going to try to formulaize it. I don't know if that's a word, but try to turn it into a formula. One, live in the future. Two, find conviction. Three, name it and frame it. I think that's probably an important step. Name it and frame it. Native advertising as a phrase is really what catalyzed the next chapter of the movement. You can't have a integrated, human-centric, respectful ad summit. You can have a native ad summit. You can't go to the IAB, which is the industry standard-setting body, and say, I want to set a standard for non-standard integrated ads. You can say, I want to set a standard for native ads. Yeah. Oh, what's a native ad? Tell me. Let's make a standard around it. So name it and frame it, and then help other people find conviction. So that was publishing, that was events, that was highlighting and amplifying the companies and the humans who are also living in the future with us, who also believed in that future with us, giving them stage time, amplifying their voices, building a customer network of customers who didn't just interact with the company, but interacted with each other. We did some incredible stuff where we do customer gatherings and have them teach each other in ways where, like, the CRO of Forbes rarely gets to talk to the head of sales of Reddit or something. Like, they could, but there's just not like a clear context for that to happen. And so creating opportunities where folks can come together and share with each other, still through the lens and the context of, in my case, share through our business, but mostly through the lens of the movement, ended up paying a ton of dividends for us as a business, but also just helped turn, again, the concept and the conviction into first a market, and then from a market into this movement. And that movement lives on. And I think that movement will, this movement around sort of human-centric, respectful advertising, will be something that just underpins the internet now and forever. I cannot imagine a world where, with the expansion into Web 3, the expansion into the metaverse, that's the big phrase of the quarter, with the expansion into VR, for example, maybe Google Glass comes back and you've got AR on your face all day. I cannot imagine a world where you're in VR and it stops you and shakes you and says, you have to watch this 30-second full-screen video ad. Or I'm walking down the street with some Google glasses on, and I get to a intersection, and the glasses say, hey, stop. I need to play you an audio ad right now. It's just not going to happen. It's going to be integrated. It's going to be respectful. It's going to be about offers and authenticity and value and suggestions and communities and brands who get integrated into people's lives, providing value in a two-directional way, as opposed to brand saying, I have money, I can steal time. I think that that concept and that construct of I have money, I can steal time had a moment, and that moment is fading away. And I think that will be to the benefit of humanity.
Indeed. I had to scribble that down. It was so funny. I have money and I can steal time. Yeah, definitely. Definitely fading. Now, speaking of time, we've alluded to this, and you gave kind of a quick history lesson, but by way of reminder, you have Web, I guess, 1 that was the web itself. You have Web 2, or I guess we 2.0'd that, which I don't know about that naming and framing, but Web 2 being the social web. So what are the traits of Web 3 that we should be on the lookout for as we work to live in the future?
Web 3 is an emergent category right now. That has different entry points. Web 3 is a connected web that's owned by the individuals of the web as opposed to owned by the platforms. Web 3 is the combination of, I hate to say this word, because the minute I say this word, everybody's going to say, oh, you're a crypto bro. But it's the combination of the blockchain technology, which has exploded into a bunch of different use cases, underpinning the way that you use the internet, becoming your login, becoming your wallet, becoming your identity, becoming your token passed to the communities that you join, and done in a way that's like on the blockchain, on chain, meaning it's done in a distributed, decentralized, not owned by Facebook version of the internet, not owned by Google version of the internet, where you'll still interact with Facebook, you'll still interact with Google, you'll still use the utilities of the web the way you kind of always have, plus new utilities, but do it in a way where you're entering the web on your own terms, entering the web with your own wallet, with your own ID, with your own universal login, your own universal access point, your own social connections that transport across whatever platform you log into, your own assets that transport across whatever platform you log into. And so the different entry points into this Web3 so far that have become sort of breakout categories, one is the creator economy. For creators who are creating video content, creating written content, they're starting to enter Web3 to realize, hey, I don't need to just post stuff to Facebook and try to pay Facebook to promote stuff and then ask Facebook to hopefully share a little bit of their revenue with me.
Yeah.
But I can own my stuff. I can own my content. I can own the stuff that I create. I can own the community that I create. And I can monetize that with my own native monetization strategy. So creator economy is one entry point. There's an emergent category right now called DAOs, Decentralized Autonomous Organizations, which is going to be a mega, mega category in the coming decade. We could have a whole podcast about that. So I'm just going to maybe like leave the thought there. If you want to live in a future, go look up DAO, DAO, Decentralized Autonomous Organizations, and there's a universe emerging around a whole new category of organization. Like we had in the Industrial Revolution even, we had like the first LLCs built. LLC was not a concept a couple hundred years ago. So like LLCs invented, S-corps, C-corps, just like the basic concepts of what a company is. A DAO is now another category of organization. But a distributed organization, one that's not registered in Delaware, but one that's registered on the internet, on the blockchain, that still can have venture capital investors who are already investing hundreds of millions of dollars into these organizations, still have an organized community with users and quote employees who get paid. But so I don't want to go too far down that, but there's an emergent category around, again, this concept called DAOs that I think will be a seed crystal that will birth the next generation of multi-billion-dollar global cross-border companies, and if not, maybe the company's not even the right word, distributed organizations. And the other angle into this is NFTs. If that's a new phrase to you, look that up. There's a huge explosion, and I'll warn you, if you dive into NFTs, you might find yourself at 2 a.m. scrolling through NFTs, Twitter, and learning about NFTs. But a huge category of creator-owned tokens or creator-owned artifacts or assets, digital assets that live on the internet that can be traded directly with other people, can be traded like sort of currency, can be traded like art, can be traded like tokens that give you access to a community, tokens give you access to something you want to learn. So NFTs are a mega emergent category. And you are starting to see, quote, brands, traditional brands, start to play here. You've got Budweiser in the mix. They're just starting to get engaged with this. Tom Sachs is a famous artist who's starting to do some NFT stuff. Budweiser is starting to get engaged with his projects. You just had Visa last week buy something called a CryptoPunk. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. If you're paying attention, you're like, yeah, of course I have. And if you're not, you're like, what is Dan talking about right now? And I think Visa spent like $500,000 or something like that on this CryptoPunk. Arizona Iced Tea, random brand last week, bought something called a Bored Ape, which is one of these NFTs, for also a few $100,000. And not as an investment, but as access to a community. And so maybe I'll tie a bow around this to say what's really exciting to me and the reason that I'm jamming on this Web3 stuff right now is because as a brand in Web 2.0 and the past 10 years, I think folks have talked a lot about authenticity and value exchange and the importance of being human and direct and the importance of being a content creator, brands as content creators. But it was reserved for brands like, you know, Red Bull or Nike. And it was reserved for brands who said, yeah, I can do that. And a lot of brands said, look, I can't do that. I can't be authentic. I can't create content. I can't create value. I'm just going to buy attention. And in Web 2.0, authenticity like that was a differentiator, and it was seen as an option. In Web 3, it will be a gate. In Web 3, the communities who control the ads that they see, as opposed to Facebook, who controls the ads you see, or as opposed to the platforms who control the ads you see, in Web 3, the community will have to say, yeah, I invite this brand into our community. You know, we as a community want to reach out to invite this marketer, invite this brand into our community, as opposed to, you know, Web 2 or what we have today even, is that brands in most cases are like these uninvited guests in the feed. They're trying to fit in and trying to create content, but generally they're paying Facebook to get into your feed. And when we say that today, I think that's like, yeah, that's how the internet works. Brands pay Facebook to get into my feed. Brands pay Twitter to get into my head. Brands pay, you know, LinkedIn to get into my professional network feed. But when you stop and think about that for a second, that is a pretty crazy construct, that brands pay a third-party technology company to get it into your feed. The Web3 construct says, nope, brands must be welcomed in as part of the community, as opposed to being an invited guest. They need to be, as opposed to being an uninvited guest, they need to be an invited guest into the community by the community. Some brands will host their own communities. You will see a Nike, Red Bull, et cetera, type of DAO exist. You know, NFT projects will come out of them. You've got brands like The Hundreds who are launching their own versions of NFT projects and communities. But I think for any mega brand, and I'm not yet talking about like startup brands, but for any brand marketer who's handling, you know, an important brand at any scale, if that important brand wants to find a community and find an audience in the next version of the internet, the token that they'll have to pay with is going to be authenticity and value. They won't be able to just force attention with money. They will need to bring something of value to get welcomed into the community. So you can tell I'm excited about this stuff because it feels like we are onto something right now. And I can jam on this for a while, but I'll pause because if you're like, Dan, what the heck are you even talking about? Feel free to ask me some clarifying questions.
Well, no, we are jamming. I can tell, and I would love to hear more, but sadly we're out of time. So we may have to schedule another appearance to focus solely on Web3. Dan, you've made me smile many times over the course of our conversation, from talking about stealing time to the NFT 2 a.m. rabbit hole, which I think is why I've stayed away from it so far. But what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
I'm going to stick with my Web3 track here, and I'm going to make a point in the brand I choose. I think traditionally brands are thought of as like a corporate entity. The corporate entity is the brand, Coca-Cola, Nestle, Nike. In the new world, if you ask your kids, you know, tell me about a brand, they might tell you about a YouTube star. They might tell you about a Twitch streamer. Mm. You know, they might tell you about an Instagram influencer that doesn't live at the edges of their consciousness, but that is a brand in their world. You know, it's a brand that they follow, a brand they pay attention to, a brand they buy from, a brand that they are influenced by and identify with. And so I'll say this, a brand, quote brand, who has made me smile a lot over the years and a lot recently is a person named Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary Vaynerchuk is a innovative marketer who runs an agency and is just one of those characters who, when you get in a room with him, he just makes you smile. He has been a lighthouse for brands who are thinking about Web3 and just a positivity engine. In his Twitter, in his real life, in the videos he's creating. So yeah, if you want to both learn about Web3 stuff and smile at the same time, check out Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V.
Awesome. Gary is great. And where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Probably Twitter, which maybe is not a very Web3 thing of me to say, but probably Twitter, D Greenberg, spelled with an E, D Green like the color, B-E-R-G on Twitter. Or find me at dan@sharethrough.com if you want to have a more in-depth conversation over email. And if you want to learn more about ShareThrough, and if you are a brand who's thinking about how to do more modern advertising and uses a DSP to run programmatic advertising, and that's just natural to you, ShareThrough, again, is one of the largest supply sources in every major DSP. We're one of the largest global ad exchanges. And often are one of the highest performing supply sources for any brand who's doing native video display across any channel. So find us there. Find me on Twitter and talk to me, or you want to talk in more depth, hit me on email, dan@sharethrough.com.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Dan, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks for having me.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember you can listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.